Welcome into a brand new episode, a jam-packed episode of Calling It, recording on Tuesday, April 13th, just before noon in Boston. I'm Alex Barth, joined as always by Alex Lebowitz, and we were going to try to record yesterday, and it's a good thing we didn't, Lebowitz, because everything hit the fan. Busy day, NHL trade deadline, but the news of the day, the news of the week, Julian Edelman stepping away from the game of football. The knee injury catches up to him. He has to retire after 11 seasons, 12 years in the league, one spent. He missed due to a torn ACL, but just an incredible, incredible player, and we as Patriots fans were lucky to get to watch him.
Yeah, one of those guys who is just one of the most fun guys, easy guys to root for of my lifetime. You want to talk about just a gritty, hardworking, charismatic player who was as clutch as anybody. I mean, that's him. And I don't know if anyone was really all that surprised to see him retire. I think people were to an extent, just because you figure he'd go until it got sad. I don't think he went that far. I think he was definitely breaking down. But overall, it's a big loss for Patriot fans. But you got to be happy for him. What a career! One of the greatest playoff performers you'll ever see. And you know, more than that, from a personal standpoint, for you and I both, one of the biggest Jewish athletes we've ever rooted for.
First Jewish Super Bowl MVP. First and probably only, but first.
Hey, I'm not losing hope. There's going to be a Jewish quarterback
Josh Rosen's going to turn it around that much?
No, someone else. There's got to be another Jewish quarterback waiting in the wing. But that honestly is something personally for me that I'll always appreciate and respect, because he wasn't somebody who was all that ingrained in Jewish culture growing up, but he kind of learned about it and he became more proud of that as his career went off. I think went along. I think that's partially due to Robert Kraft and his influence. But I can't remember a more prominent Jewish athlete who was more proud to be Jewish than a guy like Julian Edelman. Like Koufax is one other guy that comes to mind. Again, Euculus, Gabe Kapler, those are other guys, but they weren't at the level he was. But most of all, just one of the most respectable guys you could ever root for. And what a career. Patriots Hall of Famer, no doubt.
I mean, for me, it was because I was a big Drew Bledsoe fan, right? So here comes the next number 11, and then he houses a punt, takes a punt for a touchdown in the first preseason game he ever played, right, in 2009 against the Eagles. I bought the jersey, or I had my parents buy me the jersey right there. That was it. I was sold, and he was one of the few guys for me. You know, it was different when I started covering the team, and there happened to be a lot of roster turnover around that time, that there weren't a ton of guys I rooted for as a kid that I also covered. I mean, it's basically Brady, Edelman, McCourty, and Hightower. And that is Matthew Slater. That's the list. And obviously Brady's Brady, but Edelman, with the number, with the Jewish heritage, all that, there was always that connection. And that was a big one for me to get to cover him. It was very cool. And I always felt like there was a unique lens there that, I rooted for him when I was 14, and then at 24, I got to cover him winning Super Bowl MVP. So that was pretty cool. But just an outstanding career, and I'll say it, Lebowitz, I will say it, and I had this argument this morning on Sports Map Radio with Jake Asman, a Hall of Fame career.
Yeah.
I think if – here's the argument I made with Jake, because – and when people – Julian Edelman is going to have the most – what's the word? Contentious Hall of Fame case until Matthew Slater in a couple years, but they're going to be one and two. And with Edelman, there's arguments on both sides, but what people will tell you is the numbers, right? He only had 600 catches. The yards weren't there. Never, whatever. If we are solely putting people in based on regular season numbers and that's it, and that's the qualifying end all be all, then you might as well make it the Fantasy Football Hall of Fame. Then stop putting individual defensive players in and put in team defenses, right? I think that, and then people will say, well, Torrey Holt's not in, and Torrey Holt was a better receiver. Yes, they can both be in. the Hall of Fame as a whole, this predates Edelman, has a major problem with evaluating wide receiver talent. They put Marvin Harrison in before Terrell Owens. Both deserve to be in, but Terrell Owens is a top five receiver of all time. I don't know that I'd say the same thing about Marvin Harrison. So, you know, Torrey Holt should be in before Edelman. Yeah, you're right. Stanley Morgan should be in before Edelman, too. I would argue that. They can all get in. The Hall of Fame is just a mess. And then I'll add this, too. And this is really going to come to a head, because this is going beyond the Patriots. Because you're going to have – well, you are going to have Matthew Slater. But you're going to have Adam Vinatieri become eligible. You're going to have a guy like Darren Sproles become eligible, right? In the modern game, when you look at wide receiver, it's really broken into two positions. There's outside receiver and there's slot receiver. And there's guys who can do both. But I would say that's akin to a guy who can play both safety and corner, right? A guy, you know, like a Devin McCourty, or a guy like a Jalen Mills would be a great example there. So if you look at it through that lens, right, because the slot receivers are never going to stack up to the corners or stack up to the outside receivers. It's like the tight ends are never going to stack up if you look number for number, right? But when you look at slot receivers, Julian Edelman changed the game for slot receivers. Julian Edelman is the greatest slot receiver of all time. And the NFL at a certain point is going to have to acknowledge these positions that it views as lesser, because it's going to end up leaving great players out. Devin Hester is one. Darren Sproles, the receiving running back role, right? The running back is kind of two positions now, the early down back and the receiving back. You're going to have to acknowledge a guy like Darren Sproles, like Devin Hester. Larry Centers, I wrote about this for 98.5 The Sports Hub last year. Larry Centers, when he retired, was top 10 in most major receiving categories, but he was a fullback, so they didn't put him in, even though he was the first ever back of any kind to record 100 receptions in a season. Larry Centers should be in, but slot receiver, special teams ace, pass catching back, fullback. The Hall of Fame has ignored these positions for years. And they've been able to get away with it because the game star players never played those positions. Now they do. And the NFL is going to have to acknowledge that. And I think it should start with Larry Centers, but it can start with Julian Edelman, with Darren Sproles, and with Matthew Slater. So that's the Edelman Hall of Fame spiel, but he absolutely should be in.
Yeah, I think you just had to go off of what the gauge is currently, and absolutely inconsistencies. I think the Terrell Owens example is as prime as you can find. I mean, the guy is a clear-cut first ballot Hall of Famer, and as of yet, he's not in there. And that's sad. And it shows that it's a flawed process. I'd also say this. People like to say that Eli Manning is a slam dunk for the Hall of Fame. And when they make that argument, they're not citing his regular season performances. They're citing his Super Bowls and how he played in the postseason. That same logic applies with the Julian Edelman. The guy, if you judge simply by his regular season success, yeah, no, he's not a Hall of Famer. There's zero argument to be made there. Look at where he stacks up in the postseason. He's the only person better than him at that position all time is Jerry Rice.
Right, so that was my other point. Sorry. There's an argument to be made. He's the greatest postseason performer in the history of the game. If you talk about how much he elevated his game, and I don't subscribe to this, but some people do, there's an argument he's a better postseason performer than Brady. Did I lose you there? Hello? Or you just shocked?
No, you cut out there.
Okay.
I'm in shock. No, he I didn't catch. He's a better postseason performer than what?
Some people would argue that in terms of elevating their game, he's a better postseason performer than Brady.
Oh, that's, I mean, that's, I don't think, I think it's Look, a that, mutually that beneficial a relationship.
That one's in, you're right. But I mean, I don't want to compare him to Curt Schilling, because there's obviously a lot of other baggage there, right, that involves Schilling not getting in. But it sucks, because otherwise it's a good comparison, because you have a guy who has borderline Hall of Fame numbers in the regular season, but what he did when the games mattered most just tops what everybody else did. And you can't pick and choose when you use postseason accomplishments. We're going to put Eli Manning in, not because he was a great football player. He wasn't. He wasn't very good. Eli Manning was not a very good quarterback, but his last name is Manning and he has two rings. And he's going to get in on that. And Edelman doesn't have the name. But I'll tell you this, he was a better playoff performer than Eli Manning. So if we're putting Eli Manning in solely off the playoff performances, then Julian Edelman should walk in.
And that's the thing. Like, and you know, I guarantee you, Asman would say that Eli Manning is a Hall of Famer.
Said that.
And his argument's probably, well, the quarterback's the most important position.
Eli Manning would be the second quarterback in the history of the Hall of Fame to be inducted with a 500 or worse record. And by the way, do you know who the other one is?
No, I don't think
Joe Namath. Where did Eli Manning and Joe Namath play?
It's a good point. It's a big market, New York.
Exactly. That's it. Name, market. That's why Eli's getting in. Name and market.
And success is the big one. I mean, because you look at Julian Edelman, the guy won. The guy won a ton. He had three rings by the time he was done in the NFL. He went to another few Super Bowls on that. And he's somebody who, you know, was a part of a big market team, no doubt. But more than that, he was a part of a dynasty, a successful team. And he was the constant. It was him and Tom Brady. People like to talk about Belichick and Brady. I think Edelman and Brady, at least in the 2000s, it's Edelman, Brady, and Gronkowski. All three of those guys are Hall of Famers.
And I would say when you consider Tom Brady's – the Edelman was Tom Brady's favorite target for the majority of his career. Think about what that means when you consider both how long Tom Brady played and who he played with. That Julian Edelman was his favorite target more than anybody else for a longer period of time than anybody else.
Yeah.
I'm not saying Julian Edelman is as good of a receiver as Marvin Harrison. That's not what I'm saying. But if you're going to tell me Marvin Harrison was a better player than Terrell Owens, that's solely linked to the quarterback. At that point, you're just looking at the numbers Marvin Harrison had flucked up because he played his entire career, save 1 year at the very end with Peyton Manning. If we're going to put receivers in on numbers fluffed up by the quarterback, then you have to put Edelman in. I'm not saying Edelman's a product of Brady. I mean, he is to an extent. But if Marvin Harrison is a better player than Terrell Owens, Julian Edelman is a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Yeah. And I do think that we will see Julian Edelman in Canton. He is a Hall of Famer.
I don't think so. And it's the Hall of Fame's just so broken. Again, I'll give you this one, Lebowitz. Would you consider LaDainian Tomlinson to be a good receiving back? Obviously, great running back. Good receiving back.
Was he really known for that as much?
How about this? Maybe. Marshall Faulk.
I mean, he was a down nose. He was a hard nose type of runner. No, like not as much. The receiving game wasn't as reliant for on running
back. Greatest show on turf. Greatest show on turf there, Lebowitz.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was an unbelievable team.
Faulk was one of the great dual threat running backs.
Sure. That was late 90s, early 2000s. Yeah. I'm not familiar with Marshall Faulk's entire
But Tomlinson was a great pass catching back, but Marshall Faulk was considered the standard at one point.
Sure.
This guy
has changed the game.
60 more catches, only 50 less yards. So practically the same numbers. And he's not in because he's a fullback, Larry Centers. The Hall of Fame is broken. The Hall of Fame is just broken. And Julian Edelman, right? The guys I said before, Darren Sproles, Matt Forte, Matthew Slater, Adam Vinatieri. These guys are – there's going to be more and more proof stacking up against the Hall that the system is broken. And it's not 1980 anymore. And it's not all wide receivers are deep threats. But even with the deep threats, I don't know how much you know about Stanley Morgan, Lebowitz.
Mm-hmm.
Let me pull up these numbers real quick. Stanley Morgan, okay, is the all-time leader in yards per catch among receivers with at least 500 catches. 19.2 yards per catch. He went over 20 yards per catch six times in his career. The guy's not a Hall of Famer. The guy's never been considered a Hall of Famer. Yards per catch is a significant stat. Not considered a Hall of Famer. Former All-Pro, not considered a Hall of Famer. The system's broken. It's beyond Edelman.
Yeah, I'd say out of the people you name, the surest thing is Adam Vinatieri, realistically, right? I mean, I can't – I know it's tough for special teamers, but that's one of the most impactful kickers of all time,
if not the most. And Vinatieri's the best kicker. I mean, he is the best kicker of all time, but there were guys who came up, right? The Andersons come up, Morton Anderson, Gary Anderson, who were just great all-time members of the NFL.
And Anderson wasn't inducted until, like, only, what, a few years ago, right?
Did he even get in?
Yeah, I think Morton Anderson is in now.
Morton or Gary?
Morton, I believe.
Morton, you might be right. I got to look this up. It took them how many years to put Ray Guy in? Ray Guy's the greatest player in the history of his position. You are right. Morton Anderson is in. Good call. Mm-hmm. It took them forever to put Ray Guy in. The system's just broken, and Edelman's going to be another example of that.
Well, but I do think for the system to become unbroken, you're going to need some inductions that kind of change that. And I'm not saying absolutely. That Julian Edelman's going to be that guy, but you'd have to think, given the backlash that Canton that the Hall of Fame has received, mainly in regard to the Terrell Owens controversy and just how inconsistent they've been at multiple positions, but specifically wide receiver, you'd think that at some point they're going to try to aim for continuity, for consistency. And they're going to have some sort of gauge to do that. They're going to have to, induct some people that they otherwise would not in the name of saving the face, I guess,
but,
and saving the reputation.
But they've never been willing to do that. And that's more the point.
But if the game's evolving.
But that's the thing. They've never been willing to recognize the game's evolving. They've never been able to recognize that. And that's the point. And this year is going to be the interesting one. This, I think you talk about you need somebody to change it. If they don't put Devin Hester in, I mean, we just need to strip the power from the voters. We need to completely overhaul the voters. Devin Hester should be in the Hall of Fame. He changed games unlike anybody else at his position. And it shouldn't be a question that a guy like that gets in, but it's going to be.
If you're the greatest year position of all time, I mean, what else do you need? Maybe long snapper is the only exception to that holder.
But again, it should be position by position. It should not be, we should not be comparing long snappers to quarterbacks. Because it's not how it works. It should be position by position. There are players, the greatest at the position, who are not in. There are fullbacks, and it's different because fullback and halfback kind of switched in the 80s. So that's a weird one. But again, Ray Guy, greatest punter of all time, was not in for years. Years. We'll see if Vinatieri gets in on the first ballot. I don't think he will. Julian Edelman is the greatest slot receiver of all time, and he might not get in. So positions is defined by, what you have on Madden. That doesn't accurately reflect football anymore. There's more than whatever it is, 16 positions.
Yeah.
Slot corner, outside corner, slot receiver, outside receiver, third down back, traditional back, fullback, long snapper, kick return specialist. It's a specialized game. And the Hall of Fame doesn't recognize that.
Yeah. And you hope at some point they do. And maybe within the next 5 years, something changes. Maybe something will change. But he's not going to be a first ballot guy.
That's fine. But he should be in.
He should be in. But one side note, you mentioned starting this off, the punt return.
Yeah.
From Edelman back in 2011, 2010.
I wanted to do your best Edelman moment.
But I mean, the best Edelman moment ever is the catch in against the Falcons in the Super Bowl. To me, that's got to be number one. Edelman to Amendola is top five, no doubt.
That's my number one. The Super Bowl catch was great, but was that? It wasn't the play of the game.
No, and it was also first down, if I remember correctly.
Third.
Was that third and 10? Maybe it was.
No, it was a first down. Sorry, it was a first down play.
So they could have.
But it's more like it would have been intercepted. Like if he doesn't catch that, it's dead.
Yeah. He fought for the ball. I mean that, and I picked that over the Edelman to Amendola. Edelman to Amendola was awesome. That was a sick play. And obviously the trick plays are more fun. But if there's any singular play that is symbolic of Edelman and his career, isn't it the catch? I mean, it has to be. That's it. That's the one play I look to when people ask me, what do you think of? Like, what's the one moment in Edelman's career that sticks out more than the others? It's that one for me.
What about in 49 when he goes over the middle? And that was a third down. That's what I was thinking of. That was a third down. Third and 14, down 10.
Against the Seahawks? Have it
against Seahawks and gets popped by Cam Chancellor.
Oh, yeah.
And he gets right back up. Concussed. That, I would say, is more of a, you know, if you want to talk about, you know, stereotypical Edelman, that is more the, like, play that embodies Julian Edelman. The Super Bowl one, that's, I mean, that was just spectacular. That was unlike really anything. The Cam Chancellor one, to me, is more like that's who he was, right? It started being a joke about Wes Welker, and then Edelman kind of inherited it. It was, you know, you'd say, oh, one time when he was a kid, Julian Edelman got hit by a bus. He got up, dusted himself off, got on the bus, and went to school. That was Julian Edelman.
Yeah, 100%. There's one clip though. The clip of that, the NFL Films had it, and it was the Edelman return, and that was during preseason, I believe, right?
Was his first preseason, like rookie year, first preseason game.
And there's a clip. It's Belichick, and he's like, "Hey, Ernie, who was that guy who started before Lou Gehrig?" And he goes, "Oh, Wally Pipp." Wally Pippen, whatever the hell his name is.
Low key, the best part about that clip, and I know where you're going with this, but the best part about that clip is actually that he just asks Ernie, and Ernie just knows. Because of course
like,
he does.
He's like IBM Watson. Like,
exactly.
It's like, boop, boop, boop.
Hey, Alexa, it's just, hey, Ernie.
And then he goes up to Welker to let him know. He's like, hey, you know who Wally Pipp is, right? And he's like, who? He's like, the guy who started before Lou Gehrig. And by the time Lou Gehrig finished playing, he had set the record for the most games consecutively, called the Iron Man, yada, yada, yada. And he's like, that might be the guy taking over your punt position. And then Welker goes, he can have it. And Belichick, in, you know, typical Belichick fashion, goes, that's a way to compete, Wes. Way to compete. And he was clearly, like, pissed. Like, you know that irked him. And that was probably, you know, that was another thing that – showed you where his opinion of Welker in that regard. Talented guy, didn't have that edge. When Welker left the Patriots, went to the Broncos, it was Edelman who stepped in, became that guy, maybe not right away, but eventually became that guy. And more so than Welker, he had that chip on his shoulder. Welker didn't have that chip on his shoulder. Welker was an undrafted guy. He had the story behind him. He became a league-wide name, a Pro Bowler, all that stuff. But he didn't have that chip on his shoulder like Edelman did. And it just made Edelman more fun to root for. He was a guy who was going to go to war, who played with that edge, played with emotion. And I felt like his connection to Brady was maybe a little bit stronger than that of Welker. It definitely became that way, but I think it was more of a natural thing too. So – I don't know, that clip, I loved watching that clip. It was great on so many fronts. And again, what a career from the guy.
Yeah, absolutely. And it, again, I think for sure Hall of Fame career. I give him his red jacket at halftime of the Pats Bucks game this year.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, he's going to be in there. Why is there a 5-year limit for waiting period for the Patriots Hall of Fame? I don't get that.
There's no official weight limit for the Patriots Hall of Fame. It's just they're so backlogged at this point with all the guys from the first dynasty, right? Like, it's hard to keep track at this point. I don't think Vrabel's in yet. They've still got to put – and they got some guys from in between, too. They got to put Mankins in. They got to put Moss in. They should put Welker in. I know some people don't want them to. They should put Welker in. They've got to put – I'm missing a bunch of players, too. I know I am, but – they've got a whole backlog.
They just put in Ty Law. They put in – well, Ty Law just made the pro.
Law's in. Seymour's in to the Patriots. Bledsoe's in. Brewski's in. Rodney's in.
McGinnis
is in. I don't think Vince is in yet.
No, has it been 5 years? I don't think it's been 5 years. Has it? It's been close.
I don't think there's a 5 year waiting period for the Patriots Hall of Fame. Maybe there is. I'm not really sure where that's. So, yeah, well, they got to get
Will Fork, Edelman, they'll both 100%.
They got to get Deion Branch in. That's one.
Oh, yeah.
Troy Brown. They might. Who?
Troy Brown.
Troy Brown is in. They got to put Gerard Mayo in. They might wait a little bit. I'm not with his status as a coach. I'm not sure how that works. They got to put him in. I'm looking at the list right now. They should put Corey Dillon in. I don't think they will, but they should put Corey Dillon in. So yeah, they got a long.
So you think Moss and Dillon both in?
Moss, absolutely. I'm personally a big Corey Dillon fan. I wouldn't be super offended if they don't put him in. There's a lot of guys. I was just looking at the list on the somebody put a list of potential players. There's a bunch of guys who should get in before him again. Vince Moss. Mankin should get in before him.
Kevin Falk.
Falk's in. Copen.
Yeah.
Copen should get in, certainly, before him. I might even put Ben Watson in before him. You know, again, a long list. You can probably just put Jake Bailey in already, honestly. But
yeah, I mean, Vinatieri and Gostkowski, both those guys.
Right. Well, Gostkowski's still playing.
Yes, obviously.
Vinatieri would be a guy that as soon as he becomes eligible, I would put him in.
Mm-hmm.
He's a guy that I would jump. I don't know that anybody right now. Will Fork, I might jump to the front of the line. Besides that, I don't know. In terms of guys right now, once Vinatieri's officially retired, he should jump to the front of the line. Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he won them Super Bowls. So.
Oh, yeah. All right, we got a bunch of other stuff we gotta get to though. So, you have any final thoughts on Edelman there?
I think that's it. Great Jewish athlete. I look forward to seeing what his retirement brings. I think he's a guy who definitely has potential to be.
All right, he's not
an analyst. He'll be an analyst. Maybe he'll even be in the booth. I don't know if he's polished enough to do that, but he's gonna have a media career, which is gonna be fun to watch as well, which I look forward to.
Yeah, no, he's going to be we'll keep seeing him, and he's going to probably do more like the documentary stuff and that. So,
oh, yeah.
Let's move on to the Bruins, though, because it was a busy day yesterday, right? Even before the Edelman stuff. Bruins, two moves, three players at the trade deadline. Obviously, the gem, Taylor Hall from the Buffalo Sabres. Sabres fans, Jesse Feldman, friend of the show. He is bitter. Texted me right away to tell me Taylor Hall is not good anymore. And yes. Taylor Hall has not had a great season. I will concede that, but I feel like it's not easy. I don't think you can have a good season given who he was playing with in Buffalo. That team's atrocious. And this is a guy that's just 2 years removed from an MVP and being a point per game player. And I don't know that the Bruins need him to be that. If he is that, it'd be great. It'd be a ton of fun. But just to have some stability on David Krejci's wing now. And I mean, that's between him, Craig Smith, and Krejci, that's a legitimate. That's a solid second line. That's just a great group. And on top of that, they gave him nothing to get him. You know, Anders Bjork, I know he was a fan favorite, and he certainly looked like he, you know, was doing his best, but sometimes you're just not a fit. I feel like him and this Curtis Lazar guy may just be a wash in some ways. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, DeBrus probably a little better, and then he give up a second-round pick. Okay, for a former MVP, for a former first overall pick, fine. They give up a future third for a defenseman who can move the puck, which they desperately needed. Yeah. This is one of the best trade deadlines a Boston team has had in a long time. Maybe since the Red Sox got Jake Peavy in 2013. I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to think of what else is in there, right? There's been a lot of duds for the Celtics. There's been a lot. I mean, the Bruins have brought in some fun names, right? They got Jaromir Jagr a few years back, but he didn't really do much.
Yeah, if we're talking about like just results, Isaiah Thomas.
Yeah,
I mean.
Oh that, yeah, no, you're right. You're right.
It's got to be number one.
Best. Although at the time, Thomas was an unknown. They traded him for 2 seconds. In terms of results, well, we don't know the results yet on Hall. You're right.
Yeah.
But yes, I'll concede that one. You're right.
But I do think for a guy who has been struggling, this is a great opportunity. This is a great setup for him, and I think that makes this more of a low risk move. In addition to what they had to give up for him, you said it a couple years ago. The guy was an MVP. He's a former first overall pick. He's had talent. He's been an amazing all-star caliber, MVP caliber player, and he's only 29 years old. It's not like this guy's 36 on the back nine. He could still have something left in the tank, and being put on a line with David Krejci and Craig Smith, that's going to help you. That's going to help you, especially since he's not on that first line. He's not one of the main contributors. He's not one of the best players on this team. He's just a guy who has to fit that role. And I think when you put a guy into a situation where there's not a ton of pressure on him and he doesn't have to be the guy, and also he's on a good hockey when
you cut out there for a second.
You're setting him up to at least have all the tools to be able to recover in his old self. So I'm excited for it. I think it's a deal. I think this will give an energy boost. He's going to a good locker room. They have good leadership on that team. And I know that there's been question marks about his personality and his character in the past. We'll see what happens. We'll see if that does become an issue. But he's saying all the right things right now. And when you combine this deal with the fact that they're bringing Mike Riley, who will give them some much-needed depth at the blue line, it's definitely a successful trade deadline. And also combine that with the fact that Tuukka Rask will be coming back hopefully sooner rather than later. Yaroslav Halak will be out of COVID protocol sooner rather than later.
Well, let's not forget, too, Jeremy Swayman's looked pretty good.
He has, but I'm not gonna put eggs in that basket. He's looked good. Where do you put him, though? I mean, I guess you can get rid of Yaroslav Halak. That guy's expendable, but it's not like you put him in over Tuukka.
I'm just saying, if you want to give Halak more time to come back or manage Tuukka's, maybe you go to a 3-goalie rotation instead of 2. And you just, I know the Bruins are still sort of fighting for a playoff spot, but they should have it as long as they play decent hockey. And now that you're a little bit, they've been, with the way their blue line's just been imploded with injuries, they've been relying so heavily on that spot. Now that you're going to get guys back, and Charlie McAvoy skated today, and again, you add Mike Riley, they have some reinforcements up front. You don't need to lean as heavily on the goalie. I'm fine with them easing Tuukka back in, and if that means, using a third goalie from time to time, I don't think, that would be fine. I know it's a little unconventional, and I don't know how that would work with the numbers on the roster, but if they can make it work, I think Swayman's shown enough that I'd give him a couple more starts the rest of the year.
It's worth it. I think you want to see what the young guy can do. That said, he's only 22. He's under team control, right? You don't have to rush him into that position. If there's a challenge there to be had, see if you can put him out there and see how he reacts. He has reacted very well so far. Can he sustain that level of play? That's the question we need to ask, and that will eventually be answered. Point being, they're set up very well for the rest of the season, for this upcoming stretch. The next month or so, I think the playoffs start in the second week of May. So that's great. And I think that if they can gain some chemistry with these new additions and have some stability in net, and, more importantly, figure out their rotation in net, then this team could maybe go back to its old form and be a legit contender in the Stanley Cup playoffs.
And this could end up being a good long-term move. Like you said, Hall's young. He's only 29. He's on an expiring deal. He said he wants to be in Boston. He'd like an extension. Obviously, let's see how he looks before we put pen to paper. But they tried to do this with Rick Nash a couple years ago. They got Rick Nash at the deadline, expiring contract, and they wanted to, see if they could lock him up. Now, he ultimately had some issues with concussions, and he couldn't play anymore. But you get a guy who wants to be here in camp, you're going to get the first shot at him in free agency. Mm-hmm. And again, it all comes back to, if they gave up maybe a this year second round pick for Riley, which some people thought maybe they were able to underpay for him, hits you a little differently. If they give up a first round pick for Hall or a more competent prospect like DeBrusk for Hall, you kind of look twice at it. The guy has had a down year. But part of it, too, is they really didn't give up anything. Bjork wasn't really playing. The NHL draft is a total crapshoot. I think Don Sweeney absolutely killed us.
Yeah. I'll say this as well. Another thing that needs to be considered, you have an expansion draft this offseason.
Well, that's why Lazar coming back, they had to have a certain number of contracts. That's why they got Lazar back. in addition to Hall.
And I'm not gonna act like I understand the ins and outs of these expansion drafts and the criteria going into who you can protect, who you can't. But it's something to be considered, obviously. And I'm sure, you know, heading into contract talks with Taylor Hall, it's going to be one of the paramount things. Like, what's this roster going to look like after this draft? And who are the guys that we want to keep intact? And there'll be decisions to be made for sure.
But we'll see. First look at it. I'm very excited to watch the Bruins tonight. I am very, very excited. I love it when you get a big trade deadline acquisition. Like, it makes it so much more fun to watch. So that's going to be, and they're playing the Sabres. So I'm fully expecting Taylor Hall to score like 5 goals. Maybe Curtis Lazar gets one too. By the way, Evan Lazar, not a fan.
What, he wants to be the lone Lazar in Boston?
I guess. I texted him about it. He said he was pissed. I told him to buy the jersey. He said he wouldn't do it. Like, I think I've said this on the show. If I haven't, I've said it elsewhere. If the Patriots ever got Connor Barth, who was a kicker, he's retired since, but I would be through the moon. I would get like 5 jerseys. I don't know if there's any pro athletes named Lebowitz.
Nope. Unfortunately, I tried to be the first, but that failed miserably.
Okay, so maybe you can't relate, but like... If the Bruins got a guy named Barth, I'd be all about it. If he sucked, that would be unfortunate.
There are famous people named Lebowitz. Fran? You know Fran? Fran Lebowitz?
Can you get a Fran Lebowitz jersey?
No, I can get a book. That's about it, though.
Yeah, that's not the same. It's a book. It's a jersey. It's not the same. So there's still time. Look, I didn't think there would be a Barth. I mean, I didn't see that coming. I didn't think there would be a Lazar either, but.
I ever have a boy. He's getting on the mound.
Well, that's your kid. That's different. That's like by default. That is your actual last name. It's not somebody with the same last name. It's your actual last name.
I feel like there's few enough Lebowitzes in the world that we're all related. That's my thinking. It's not a very common, especially my spelling. There's the L-E-I, which there's far more of those than the Lebowitz. L-E-B.
Yeah.
There's Lebowitz. I'm Lebowitz. There's not a ton of Lebowitzes out there. So I feel like if you're a Lebowitz, I'm a Lebowitz, we're probably distant cousins at the very least.
My mom's family, they're the only – I'm not going to put my mom's maiden name out there on the internet because I like having my money in my bank account and not other people having it. But they're the only ones with that last name. That's it.
Really?
Yeah.
That's unique.
Yeah, no, it's an interesting one. So, all right, that's enough. Real quick, we do got to touch on a couple more things. The Red Sox, they hit 6 home runs on Sunday. We were pretty pessimistic after the start. Lebowitz, are you back on board?
100%. I'm back on the wagon. Big time, in the good way. I think that they responded well. 6 straight wins in a lineup that's starting to actually hit the ball like we thought they were capable of. You have J.D. Martinez, winning player of the week, along with Jason Tatum, by the way, in the NBA. And you have Rafael Devers coming around. Kike Hernandez hitting the ball pretty well, even if it's not showing up in the box score as much. And Verdugo starting to swing the bat pretty well. And more than that, more importantly, with the exception of that Sunday game, the bullpen is holding up. The starting rotation is pitching well enough. They're just playing decent baseball. They're playing good baseball. And it's nice to see, for the first time in a while, the Red Sox put a good team out on the field and actually perform well. You have to be somewhat optimistic, and especially given the way the Yankees are playing to start the season. So after the first 9 games, first 3 series through the season, winning 6 straight after losing 3 straight, it's a good sign. It's a good sign, and I'm excited to see if this remains consistent. And I think most of all, I'm looking to see how the bullpen can stick together, hold up, and if they actually establish roles. We see Matt Barnes pitch well in that closing role. Maybe he's the guy. We've seen starters pitch pretty well, and it looks like they might be able to maintain those roles. So I think over the next month or so, it's really rounding out that pitching staff and figuring out what's going on in the bullpen.
And I think this is what it might be. You mentioned losing 3, winning 6. I think it's going to be a streaky team. And I think, you know, what we've seen kind of the whole body of work, including that Orioles series, because people are ready to just write that off. And I'm not saying, you know, that's who they are. I don't think it is. But I think you can look at the whole body of work and think this is what this team will be, including the time they got swept. And I think that's fine. Again, if you win 6 of every 9 games, you're going to have the best record in baseball. I mean, that's unbelievable. So I think, you know, it's going to be a lot of runs. I think it's going to be the win 3 or 4 in a row, lose 2 or 3 in a row, win 4 or 5, lose 3 or 4. Like, I just think that's what it's going to be. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's who you are sometimes as a baseball team, especially a young baseball team, which in a sense they are right now, especially offensively. Let it happen. I think you just roll with that. So that's encouraging. You watched the Masters on Sunday. We all watched the Masters. Hideki Matsuyama, very cool win. Very cool win. And then the picture of him in the airport in Chicago with the green jacket draped over the seat waiting for his flight was epic. Boy, I wish that Xander Schauffele didn't put that ball in the water on, I think it was 15. You know, not that I was rooting against Matsuyama, but we were so close to dramatic ending and we kind of lost it there a little bit, but not a bad Masters. Not the best Masters, but I don't think it was that bad.
You wanted to be more down to the wire towards the end there, but there's still a storyline. And I think that's as important as anything. The fact that you have your first Japanese golfer win the Masters, especially, you know, in the wake of what's happened over the last month, there's something poetic about it. And it was a nice touch. And this is a guy who's been on the tour for a very long time. He's only 29, but he's been a pro golfer forever, it seems. And he was kind of due for a day like this. And the guy had ice in his veins. He was just playing really well. Obviously, his Saturday was the big day, kind of like Thursday for Justin Rose. But unlike Justin Rose, he held it together. And he ended up winning by a few strokes. What was that?
Kind of. He did slip up at the end there.
He did slip up.
It really was just a race to attrition at the end.
Yeah. And obviously, Xander messed up, and that made it less exciting. But he also had Happy Gilmore's caddy, Zalatoris.
Zalatoris, baby. Yes, Happy Gilmore's. That was fun. I'm telling you, we're leaning more and more towards a Happy Gilmore sequel. Put that kid in it. Maybe he's the cat. I don't know what he is as an actor, but cast him as the caddy who becomes a golfer who Happy Gilmore then has to beat. And that Zalatoris' character, who was Gilmore's caddy, is being trained by Shooter McGavin. There's your movie.
Maybe. But so Happy Gilmore's going to be in the senior tour.
No. He's still playing. Shooter is training Zalatoris like Chubbs trained Happy.
Okay, I get it. I don't want to root against him, though.
No, but you established the caddy's now a bad guy.
Yeah, no, I got it. I don't want him to be a bad guy. I think if
they do a sequel, Zalatoris just has to be in it for the appearance reason.
Yes, I think he makes a cameo at the very least. I wouldn't trust him as an actor, but you're also talking about a Happy Gilmore production. You know,
acting chops are not necessary in those movies.
In Adam Sandler movies. And I also don't want to see Adam Sandler spoil another movie. Because we've seen that time and time again. I've been on this train since really Uncut Gems. Adam Sandler needs to just do dramas these days. Quit it with the comedies. They're not good anymore. You jump the shark after Chuck and Larry. Maybe that's my boy.
I guess. I think you can line up his comeback with Will Ferrell's.
Where's Will Ferrell's comeback? I don't know,
but it's coming.
It's when you're least
expected, it's coming.
Well, it's sad because the 2000s, there were three comedic actors. Really, well, Sandler's more the 90s, but I'll count them in the 2000s as well. You have Seth Rogen, Will Ferrell, and Adam Sandler, the three actors who I think were the most prominent comedic actors of that decade. Every single one of them makes dog shit movies now, and it's very depressing. It makes me sad, and I just wanted to go back to normal. But obviously, that's part of growing up is – acknowledging that these things don't last forever. And I think that, you know, you get to a certain point of success, you might become complacent. They haven't made a good movie in a while. And I'd like to see maybe all of them in a movie together. And that's their mutual comeback. But
like
I'm not
like a comedy version of The Expendables. I could get behind that.
Well,
you might be onto something here.
Maybe get Paul Rudd involved.
I guess that was kind of Grown Ups, which wasn't a bad movie.
Grown Ups was amusing, yes, but it was still dumb. It's not like no one puts Grown Ups on the same level as like Happy Gilmore, Billy Madison.
No, they don't. But, you know, is Expendables on the same level as Die Hard?
No, but I
think you struck gold here. A comedy Expendables type movie for the comedians from the 2000s. But Dave, well, I guess Dave Chappelle's still relevant.
Yeah, Dave, and he's a stand-up. Keep him in stand-up world. You know what movie I loved? I probably said this on here before, which was an awesome cast, which kind of goes along with this argument. Funny People. A lot of people don't like that movie. It's very dark. It's a dark comedy. It can be kind of sad. It's depressing to an extent. But you had Seth Rogen, Jonah Hill, Adam Sandler. You had all these cameos from like Ray Romano to Eminem. One of the funniest scenes I've ever seen is Eminem and Ray Romano. If you've seen the movie, you know what I'm referencing. You had the RZA from Wu-Tang was in it. It was just a hilarious cast.
Well, what about This Is the End?
This Is the End I thought was phenomenal too. I was a big This Is the End guy.
That's a different group though. That's not like the group after Sandler and Ferrell.
Yes, but Jonah Hill and Seth Rogen were also in Funny People. And I feel like there are like a few more of the crossover.
I feel like, although, hang on, because if we're doing Ferrell and Sandler, then you just make it an SNL thing and you add Andy Samberg and you add Bill Hader, you add Keenan, you add
Fred Armisen.
Who's the one, the chick, the main chick? She played
Kristen Wiig or
Kristen
Wiig.
Thank
Poehler.
You. I always want to say Kristen Stewart. Kristen Wiig. Throw Kristen Wiig in there. Who's the other one you said?
Amy Poehler.
Yeah, you could throw Amy Poehler.
Maya Rudolph. Maya Rudolph's in a ton of Adam Sandler movies.
She is. Yeah. And she's great. I love Maya Rudolph.
She's very funny.
Well, then her mother's
like a very famous singer. And what's the song called? I know how it sounds, but I don't want to risk embarrassing myself. So I'm gonna Google it. But her mother, very legendary song, Loving You. You know that song, Loving You?
Yes.
You know if you heard. Minnie Riperton. So she's saying that song. Fun fact for you. Anyway, yeah, no, she's hilarious. She's an amazing. She's an amazing actor. She's very funny. Yeah, Chris Rock can get into this stuff. Yeah, I think more than that, you got to go back to the basics. Like Pineapple Express, Superbad. Like those are movies that are just like kind of simple plots, but with funny characters. They didn't overdo it, and they casted it right. I don't think just putting superstars in a movie it's not going to always work. Sometimes it doesn't translate. Sometimes it does. This Is the End. I think it worked out really well. Funny People, it was kind of before a lot of them blew up, but it worked out really well. The Expendables, I'm not a superhero movie, but obviously it did well in the box office. I think more than just stacking the deck and making a great cast, you just need a good movie, and you need to, again, stick with the basics. So I'm not holding my breath. But hopefully these people come out with a good comeback movie one day.
All right, real quick before we wrap it up, you wanted to shout out UMass hockey?
Oh, sure. UMass Amherst, or as they call it, UMass. The flagship. They won the national championship against, St. Cloud? And which, by the way, just ripped off the Canadiens for their logo. That's a side thought.
Look at Georgia and the Green Bay Packers.
George, you mean? Well, isn't it really Grambling State? Aren't they the ones who took?
Oh, Grambling State. I don't know the order, but yes, that logo.
Grambling State. They had the Packers G, like straight up. Like they just took I believe. But yeah, they UMass Amherst. Shout out to them. I believe it's the first national championship that a UMass school has won since like 1982, and back then it was like. I believe women's field hockey or women's soccer are a sport that's not quite as watched or not as quite as popular. It's, you know, it's not a Hockey East type of school in that sense. So big news. And I think for me, the one takeaway is that I really hope that this continues a trend of maybe Massachusetts colleges becoming more relevant in the athletics world. Obviously, hockey, there have been plenty of...
Yeah, hockey's like kind of by default, though.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's not parlay this into a BC football national championship or anything. Did BC you see who their new equipment sponsor,
New Balance. I'm a big New Balance guy, so please don't talk too much smack.
I'm just saying.
New Balance, listen, as someone who has two bunions, not one, count them, two, I am a big New Balance guy because I have wide feet and I need comfortable shoe wear. They don't sponsor this podcast, by the way. I've always been a New Balance guy. My cleats were New Balance when I played baseball. My sneakers have always been New Balance, although I do go cross brand once in a while. I love New Balance. I'm all for BC hopping on the New Balance wagon. Also, I believe it's a Boston company, so keep it local. Good for you. I'm 100% for that. But yeah, why can't I say, you know, hopefully BC can become a relevant school for basketball or football one day. It'd be nice. They have a massive stadium. Alumni Stadium's, you know, a decent venue. It's not amazing, but it's a decent venue. It's right outside of Boston. It's the number one football school in Massachusetts, in New England, really, unless you want to count maybe UConn, depressingly enough. They need to be more relevant, and I hope that one day they can return to, you know, maybe the Matt Ryan days or the Doug Flutie days. Who knows? But they're a long way from that.
So there you go. Again, a lot going on. We'll be back next week. We'll have draft preview. I think draft preview next week? 2 weeks.
Two weeks, I believe. Yep.
Draft preview. Oh, you know, we can talk next week, though. MLB The Show finally coming to Xbox.
Can't wait.
Years for this.
Can't wait.
A week from today. I'm very excited for that. So we'll talk about a bunch of fun stuff next week. In the meantime, follow us on Twitter at Calling the Podcast. Check us out online, clnsmedia.com, under the podcast tab. Until the next one, for Alex Lebowitz, I'm Alex Barth. Thanks for listening.